Come on to my house, to my house. I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, to my house. I'm gonna give you an apple and a plum and an apricot or two. Hey.
Welcome to Food for Thought. Join us for a thought-provoking glimpse into the world of the food that we savor. Meet the women and men who are growing it, foraging for it, raising it, cooking it, and who share it with the rest of us. Today's guest is Kirsten Schocke. Kirsten is the author, with her husband Christopher, of Fermented Vegetables, Creative Recipes for Fermenting 64 Vegetables and Herbs in Krauts, Kimchis, Brined Pickles, Chutneys, Relishes, and Paste. Kirsten, how did you start cooking originally? I mean, I think back to when you're in your childhood. Were there people that kind of mentored you about food and cooking?
Yes, actually. I remember cooking probably around 8 or 9 years old. My mom, I think she felt it was really important that we learned to cook because she hadn't as a child and didn't learn to cook until she was a young bride, and her mother-in-law taught her to cook. And then my grandmother in Germany, I think she took the reins and gave me a lot of skills and techniques, and some of them are sort of more old-fashioned that I'm really thankful for now.
It seems like they must have taught you to be pretty bold because fermenting is a step beyond cooking, I think. You know, it's kind of like having experiments bubbling on your countertop. How did you decide to first start fermenting foods?
You know, again, I'm going to blame my mom. She came one year to Christmas with a bubbling crock of sauerkraut in progress and Sally Fallon's book, Nourishing Traditions, which was one of the first places I think the modern fermentation movement was born from. And very early on, the book was brand new. And so that was where we started. For years, I'll be honest, we didn't do anything beyond sauerkraut.
Uh-huh.
And then one day, you know, it was, let's add this herb or let's try this vegetable with cabbage. And then it was more of the vegetable and maybe less of the cabbage. And then suddenly it was, we can just do the other vegetable.
So sauerkraut was your gateway vegetable.
Definitely.
Kind of got you started in it. And then from there, you just kept playing with it. It was in an era, too. I mean, there wasn't a lot of information out there about fermenting. I mean, you had that one book. There were a few books on the market, but really, you just had to experiment.
Yeah, I did. When we started really strongly experimenting, there really wasn't anything out there. Like you said, there was Nourishing Traditions, and then a while after that, Wild Fermentation, and then nothing. And even the internet, which now if you put in any vegetable, you're likely to find somebody who's blog posted about it somehow. But just a few years ago, that wasn't the case. So I would search on things and usually come up with nothing, but I often didn't find that it would kill us. So we just kept going, and some things were better than others.
And some things just don't ferment well. I mean, that's really how I first got in touch with you. I had tried this batch of tomatoes. I had mixed some red tomatoes in with the green tomatoes and basically ended up with something that smelled just like beer. And not in a good way. And you were like, maybe you should just put it in the compost.
Exactly. Yeah, especially things that have a high sugar content, they move towards alcohol. The yeasts get in there and want to do their job. They sort of overwhelm the lactic acid bacteria, whereas with the vegetables, you stick to that lactic acid bacteria just souring things nicely.
Uh-huh. It just kind of knows what to do. That's one of the things I love about the crock. And when I tell people about making sauerkraut, I tell them the crock really knows what to do. You just put the stuff in there and just really let it go and don't worry too much about it. If you know, you try and micromanage it too much, then you might have some problems from that. But really, it knows how to make your fermented food. Now, you live on a farm of sorts. Do you live on a pretty big piece of property with lots of trees and garden and everything?
Yeah, we live on 40 acres in the Siskiyous. Our property is quite hilly, so lots of trees and on a few flat spots, and some gardens and some terraces. And we have mostly, for the last 15 years, done some homesteading, raised a lot of our own food, used the homesteading experience for raising our children to have tangible skills as well as book knowledge and the other things people need to know growing up.
Sure. Now, how does your family feel about fermented food? Because you guys tested a whole bunch of different vegetables and different recipes in the book. I'm sure that your family has eaten a lot of fermented food.
They have. It is a constant source of teasing the parents about fermented vegetables. Our daughter especially, she really is wondering why we didn't go into some of the other fermented foods, you know, chocolate, for example.
Uh-huh.
But they all do eat fermented vegetables. They all have their favorites and are happy to share their opinions.
Uh-huh.
You know, the ferments are on the table and people are free to choose.
Uh-huh.
The two older children now are on their own, and it's pretty cute because now that it isn't just there all the time, it has become more special, and they want it.
And you know it's pretty hip. So as parents, you guys are pretty hip because you ferment things.
Yeah, it was cute because a few years back when we did have our business, our son was, he came home for the summer and worked in our kitchen, and he said, "You have no idea how many of my classmates would kill to have this job over the summer."
Oh, that's great. He had the dream job.
He had the dream job. He didn't think so, but he understood that it was cool from the outside.
Uh-huh. Now, when you go over to visit family and neighbors, do you bring some fermented item, like if you're invited to a potluck or something like that?
You know, you ratted me out. Yes. In fact, you know, sometimes I feel a little guilty because for the last many years, I think it's my fallback every time. And I think, you know, I should try something different. But then people sort of expect it to.
I think so. And you guys have done some unique things in the recipe section, because one of the things I find about fermented foods is it's so much fun to make them, but then there they are. And you look at them in the fridge and they're starting to take up space. And then pretty soon you got more in the fridge. And if you don't have a way to use them on a daily basis, you're going to get overrun pretty quick. And so you guys have really tried out lots of different ways of combining the vegetables and making different things. And I'm just dying to try the sauerkraut balls that are in your recipe book. You know, the deep fried, those look delicious.
Yeah, those are, Christopher will tell you, is one of his very favorites.
So how did you test the recipes in your book? You did all the ferments. I mean, I'm sure that over a long period of time, and took really good notes of what happened in your crocks. How many crocks do you have, by the way?
Oh, my. Well, right now, I think we have 8 or 9 water seal type, the type that have the water seal and the lid that fits over the trough of water and lets the CO2 escape.
Uh-huh.
And then a bunch of random little crocks and, of course, jars with airlock. And we even have about 4 traditionally handmade ongi pots for kimchi.
Oh, those are beautiful.
Yeah, so I do have a bit of a collection.
Well, I think the interesting thing about you guys is you started out, you really thought what you were going to do was make fermented food and sell fermented food, and that was going to be your business.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you've kind of evolved to the point where you are, you know, teaching classes and you have your book and you're really helping to move it into the hands of the people.
Yeah, that was a big thing that we discovered with our business. I mean, so much of standing at the farmer's market was education. It was allowing people to taste this food that maybe they had a bad image of, you know, being plopped on a hot dog. Or so many people would come to us and ask us to please explain the process, and they were almost embarrassed, and then they were surprised when we happily shared information, and that they're like, "Why are you sharing this with me? Because if I make it, I won't buy yours." It was funny because often they still did. But that's when we realized a couple things. One, that we liked sharing it. Like you said, it is actually quite simple, but our collective conscious just isn't used to this kind of, I won't call it cooking, but, you know, food preservation and processing, and people are fascinated by it and enjoying that enthusiasm.
Well, I'm looking forward to, we're going to come back next week and talk to your husband, Christopher, about the process of actually making a batch of sauerkraut. This is Jennifer Bell, and I've been talking with Kirsten Schocke, author of Fermented Vegetables, Creative Recipes for Fermenting 64 Vegetables and Herbs in Krauts, Kimchis, Brine Pickles, Chutneys, Relishes, and Paste. Thank you, Kirsten.
Thank you so much. It was great talking to you.
Grapes and the cakes, hey, come on to my house, come on.
If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call the listener comment line at 826-6089. You can hear this broadcast again at the KHSU website under archived programs at khsu.org. This program is also available on iTunes. Food for Thought is produced in the KHSU studios located at Humboldt State University. Our engineer is Jessica Eden, and producer is Jennifer Bell. Join us again next Friday on KHSU for another edition of Food for Thought during the KHSU homepage.